Welcome to Dana's Radio Diner. We have a great show planned for you today. I'm Dana Vernon.
I'm Dick Vernon.
Dana's Radio Diner is about interesting people, places, and subjects.
Well, today that's Max Somerville, and he has some very interesting places and subjects to talk about today. We initially met Max through Davey Whitmer, a musician friend of ours who we've interviewed here before. So Max is with us today, and he has a vast knowledge of the development of Canada and the Canadian Pacific Railroad. And Dick has always had a great love for railroads all his life. And he thought, why don't we get Max down here, and we'll just get some information about the Canadian Pacific. So we did, and Max is here, and you're going to tell us a little bit about how you were telling us about your family and how you like to travel and all that. So tell us a little bit about that, and then just keep on going.
My great-grandfather Somerville was a farmer outside of, south of York, Pennsylvania, and he was in Baltimore. This was when the trouble between the North and the South was heating up, probably in Baltimore to get farm supplies. I don't know that for sure. However, at that time, my grandfather was only a tiny baby. And great-grandfather, at the time he was in Baltimore, witnessed a horrible episode that is called in the history books the Baltimore Massacre. It was a group of Southern sympathizers who literally attacked some Northern soldiers, and in fear of their life, the Northern soldiers fired into the crowd, killing a number of the Southerners. And that's become known in the history books as the Baltimore Massacre. Great-grandfather did what any brave Somerville does in time of danger. He whipped up the team and got out of there as fast as he could go. And eventually, he was conscripted into the Union Army. It was a short while later that the Union officials came to his farm and informed him that he was conscripted into the Union Army and that he would report for duty as quickly as possible. My grandfather was, I said great-great-grandfather, this was my great-grandfather that saw this happen. Anyway, my grandfather was about a year and a half old at the time. And great-grandfather Somerville packed up the family, abandoned the farm, and went to Canada to get away from the war. That was where my grandfather grew up. And the story in the family is that he laid rails on the Canadian Pacific Railway as a young man. He came back to this country later on, and my father was born here. But the story, and I think it's probably true, was that great-grandfather, as a late teen, worked on the Canadian Pacific. That's the basis of my interest in Canada, and probably I wouldn't have the background in that if it hadn't been for great-grandfather Somerville. If you're going to understand the reasoning for the railway, you have to understand the situation in Canada. Canada is a gigantic country, far larger than a lot of us realize. Its northern tip is Ellesmere Island, which is at 83 degrees north latitude. The southern tip is Pelly Island in Lake Erie, which is approximately 42 degrees. So if you would bring Canada south and put the northern tip of Ellesmere at the Lake of the Woods in the United States, Pelly Island, the southern tip, would be about even with Panama City or Caracas, Venezuela.
Oh, really?
That's big. That's how deep the country is.
Wow.
Its widest part is the southern part, which runs from Vancouver Island east to St. John's, Newfoundland, which is approximately 4,000 miles. Wow. It runs through 4.5 time zones. Now, I say 4.5 because you have the Pacific time zone, the Rocky Mountain, the Central, the Eastern time, then Atlantic time, which we don't have in the United States. And then Newfoundland Island has its own time zone, which is a half hour. Wow.
Ahead of the Atlantic time zone.
Well, we thought we had a confusing here.
Talking about time zones, we might as well just take a moment here and understand that it was the coming of the railway that brought about the standardization of time. Because until that time, every town had its own time. When it was noon in Toronto, it was 20 after 12 in Montreal. It was 12:30 in Quebec City. And there was no standardization of time.
That would be confusing.
Well, they found that out because you can't schedule a railway if you don't have standardization of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was a man by the name of Sanford Fleming, who was the main Canadian surveying engineer on this project, that came up with the idea of standard time. No one would listen to him until it came time to start railroad scheduling after the railways were built. Then they realized that Mr. Fleming knew exactly what he was talking about, that they had to standardize the time if they were going to have a railway schedule.
Yeah.
And so that is where standard time came from, was from Sanford Fleming. Something that you will notice if you study Canadian history, and it struck me immediately, was that you won't recognize one single name when you start looking at Canadian history. They are not familiar names at all. The two countries ran, without meaning to make a pun, the two countries ran on completely separate tracks. Hmm. Our history and theirs were developed individually. Canada obtained its independence from the Crown in 1867. They did it in an entirely different way that the United States did. There's very little blood in Canadian history. There is no surgical revolution. There's no fratricidal war of separation as we had over slavery. The Canadians approached the Crown, and
when you say Crown, you mean England?
England. And essentially said, "We want to buy our country. What do you take for it?" And the arrangement was made in trading preferences and money transferred, and but mainly it was cooperative trade was what they were looking for. And it was something, I guess, that England, still suffering from the cost of every war that she had fought, was glad to get rid of the burden of Canada. The fur trade was the big thing in Canada that brought money to Great Britain, and of course that was written into their independence. Canada never had a constitution until about 20 years ago.
Oh, really?
Yes. They operated under what was called the British North American Act, which was a completely British charter. And it was not until about 20 years ago that they developed what they called their Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It has one thing in it that I wish our Constitution had. It has the right to travel. It's written right in their Constitution, is the right to travel. Now, it's understandable where this comes from, because in Canada, it was such a sparsely populated country that travel was a way of life. Unless you were going to stay in one little small town forever, travel was important. Hence, the need for the railways.
I start to get it.
That's starting to fit together then.
Yeah.
The original Canada, and here a map would be of great help, but the original Canada in the east was Ontario, Quebec, New Brunswick, and Nova Scotia. In the center was a tiny little province called the Red River Province, which is now called Manitoba and is much, much larger. And then on the west was the Crown Colony of British Columbia, which Canada wanted to bring into the Confederation. The fear of the Canadian government was that they had to get the prairies, which were just completely empty at the time, They had to get the prairie settled because of the danger of Americans coming across the line and claiming Canada for their own.
Oh.
There were no settlers in the Canadian prairies.
Oh, really?
There were roving bands of Indians, there were fur hunters and fur trappers, but as far as settlement is concerned, there were no settlements.
Wow.
And the thing that bothered the Canadian government was the possibility of having the country riven in half by the United States coming in and claiming that central part of Canada. There was a lot of bad feeling in Canada toward the United States, hung over from the Revolution and from the War of 1812. That was a sore place with them, and they referred to us as the Yankees, and a Yankee was not a good term. It was completely derogatory. The first Prime Minister of Canada was Sir John Macdonald. He was the equivalent of our George Washington, but he was a totally, totally different type of person. He was a complete politician. And since the country was not brought into being through war, it was brought into being through politics, Sir John became the first Prime Minister, and it was under his tutelage that the idea of a railway linking east to west was developed. And he saw that as a necessity because unless the needs of the Western Canadians could be satisfied by the goods from Eastern Canada, and that trade could be run back and forth across the country, all trade was going to go south into the United States, Seattle, to Portland, places like that.
So it brought the whole country together, more or less.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
More, not less. Yes, and the East-West Railway would act pretty much as a barrier, you know, to north-south trade with the United States. Sir John, it turned out, was right, that's exactly what they had to do, but they were faced with problems that our railway builders never dreamed of. See, Canada, Canada is so different from us in its population dispersion. 50% of Canadians live within 100 miles of the United States, and 90% of them live within 200 miles of the United States. So if you find Canada being obsessed with, and that's maybe not a good term, but Canada and the railroads being all intertwined, it's because Canada, if you look at the population, it looks like a railroad. It's a narrow country, 4,000 miles east to the west, the population within 200 miles of the United States, with a small archipelago of populated areas to the north. But the main country is 200 miles wide and 4,000 miles long.
Wow. Yeah.
And as we go along here, you'll see that the settlement in Western Canada was totally different than the settlement in the United States. In the United States, the territories were thrown open, people moved in to combat crime, they elected their sheriff, and the sheriff, if he lived long enough, would fight crime. The Canadians did it differently. Before they opened the territories up for settlement, they had established the Royal Canadian Mounted Police in all the areas.
Oh, yeah.
And so when settlers came into the territories, the law was already there.
That makes sense.
Yes, yeah. It does. Well, it makes sense. The Americans chafed under it, though. They felt that their rights, that they had come to Canada to work on the railway, and they felt their rights were being usurped because it wasn't the business of the federal government to see that law was established, that law should be established by the locals, and the federal government in Canada didn't see it that way.
Oh.
And consequently, you read the Canadian history, you don't find the bloodletting in Western Canada that you find in the United States because it wasn't permitted.
Oh.
And the other thing was that the settlement of the Western prairies came about much later than it did in this country, and most of the settlers came west on the train.
So nothing would have happened had it not been for the Canadian Pacific.
Canadian right? Pacific was the catalyst for the settlement of Western Canada.
Yeah.
Now, geographically, Canada is bounded, of course, on the east and west by the two oceans. The St. Lawrence Valley was a verdant farming area, as was Western Ontario. And by 1870, most of the arable land in Ontario and Quebec had been settled. And those who wanted to farm had no place to go. They're just west of Toronto. You start coming into what's called the Canadian Shield. And the Canadian Shield is a layer of Precambrian rock, some of the hardest rock in the world. It's granite. It runs 700 miles east and west, and it runs from the north shore of Lake Superior to Hudson Bay.
Oh.
And it is totally unfarmable. There is no tillable soil on it at all. It is just hard rock. Riding the train, you remember the old railroads used the telegraph wires? They ran alongside the railroad.
Yeah.
And today they don't use them. They use the telephones now. But at the time, they had to put up the telegraph poles. And when you ride the train through the Canadian Shield, you'll find that those telephone poles or telegraph poles were put up by piling rocks around them because there was no way to dig a hole.
Oh, you couldn't drill into it?
You couldn't drill.
Oh.
They used absolutely tons and tons of TNT and nitroglycerin to blast through that Precambrian shield.
Wow.
And this was where a lot of the argument came from in the government. The two political parties there were the Liberals and the Conservatives. And interestingly enough, it was the Conservatives who wanted to build the railway and the Liberals who didn't want to build the railway. And it was a continual fight in Parliament, and it wasn't so much that the Liberals didn't want the railway, they just didn't want the Conservatives to build the railway. And that begins to sound familiar, doesn't it?
Well, it sounds like today's politics.
Exactly right. But there was so much personal interest in Canada, it didn't involve the country as a nation itself. It was, well, what's in it for me? British Columbia would not come into the Confederation until they had the promise of a railroad.
Oh.
And, they got lots of other things too, federal money and so on. And even then, they acted as if they hated the East. They wanted to be a little country of their own with all the benefits of being part of Canada.
Well, is that similar to the North and South that they had in the United States at one time?
Well, in a tangential way, it probably would be.
Yeah.
British Columbia was mainly one town, which was actually on Vancouver Island. It was called Victoria. And today it is the capital of the province of British Columbia. And a tremendous amount of speculation went on in that area as to where the terminus of the railway would be when it came in, because the story is rife with land speculators. People who got inside information and went out and squatted on land so that the railway would have to buy the land from them, run the price of the land up. And it's just appalling when you read about the development of the Western Terminus, which became Vancouver. And Vancouver was a railroad town. It didn't exist until the railroad came there.
Oh.
And the speculators that had tried to get three or four other locations and had spent money on it lost all their shirts because the railroad didn't go there. And it was the same story across Canada. If you look at the map of Canada from Montreal to Ottawa, now this is headed west, the building of the Canadian Pacific began in a town which is called North Bay. At that time, the town didn't exist. But North Bay was a railroad town, and that was the beginning. See, the Quebec-Montreal and Western Railway, I think it was called, came to that point. And it was from there that the Canadian Pacific would be built. So looking on the map, you'll see from North Bay, you'll see Sudbury, you'll see Sault Ste. Marie, you'll see, then you come to Lake Superior, and the railway went north of Lake Superior to Nepagon, and then to Thunder Bay, which at the time was called Port Arthur. And then from Port Arthur, they went west to Kenora, and that was the last town in Ontario. Winnipeg didn't really exist in Manitoba until the railway came.
Oh.
And from Winnipeg, there was Moose Jaw, there was Brandon. The interesting story about Brandon, there was a town called Grand Valley, which was where the railway would cross the Assiniboine River. And the speculators had come in there, and they were holding out for great big money in order for the railroad to have to buy the land to build the station on. See, at that time, the town developed around the railroad station. That was the center of town, because this is how people got there, and this is how people left. The railway station was the center of town, and that was where the speculators wanted to be located, was near the railway station. Well, the prices just became so ridiculous that the railroad moved on 2 miles on down the line and built the station there, and today Grand Valley doesn't exist. The city of Brandon, Manitoba, it was the town that was built by the railroad, and it was simply to show the speculators that they were not going to be taken advantage of. And the story is pretty much the same on across the country. You have Regina, which was the city, is the capital of Saskatchewan. It was named for Queen Victoria. And you have Medicine Hat and Calgary, and that was where they left the prairies and went into the mountains, and that was where the real work started. The undertaking of such a thing in Canada is really staggering when you understand what the railway builders would be up against. The idea of building a railway in this country was a staggering undertaking when you consider the fact that Canada had a population of 3.5 million people. And the idea of financing this was just unbelievable, where the money would come from. One of the things that they had to fight in order to do this were the existing railroads in eastern Canada that did not want a federal railroad being operated in competition with them. Their biggest troublemaker was the Grand Trunk Railroad, which was really an English organization, but had a tremendous amount of influence in Canada, and the Grand Trunk did everything they could to oppose it in Parliament. They did everything that they could to oppose it in the financial circles to prevent people from buying stock, and they threw everything in the way. And when I stop and think back over it, that once this rail, from the time of its conception until the time the last spike was driven, was 14 years. I think it took 10 years to raise the money.
Oh,
and
really?
Just enough money to get started. It took 10 years. And then the rest of the money had to be raised while they were building the railway.
Wow. That was faith.
It certainly was. The main people that raised the money for it was George Stephen. Once again, these will be names you don't recognize. George Stephen was the president of the Bank of Montreal. He had a cousin by the name of Donald Smith. What an interesting name.
Yeah.
Who was a big shareholder in the Hudson Bay Company. These were both wealthy men. The other ones were names Duncan McIntyre, James Hill, who was another railroad man, and Richard Angus. You'll notice that the money These were the guys that raised the money. It was raised by Scotsmen.
Oh.
It was the Scotsmen that raised the money. It was the English who spent the money, and it was the Irish that built the railway. And the actually getting the laws and the acceptance of Parliament took from 1871 until 1881. And that was when the building of the Canadian Pacific began. It was supposed to be done in 10 years, and they did it in 5.
Oh, they did? Wow.
And there were several times, which we can talk about in the next program, there were several times when they were right up to the 11th hour looking at default.
Wow.
And they were still able to get the money through. It's an amazing story. Building the line across the prairies, there was one day they built 6 miles of railroad in one working
day. Wow.
But that averaged out when they got into the Rocky Mountains. Once you got into the mountains in Canada, you had 3 horrible ranges of mountains, and the debate raged as to where they would go through the mountains, what pass would they use. And I don't suppose there's ever been a place more surveyed than the Canadian Rockies.
Mm-hmm.
There were four or five passes, and none of them were good. The easiest pass was the Yellowhead, which they decided not to use because it was too far north. They wanted to stay as south, as near the United States as they could. They didn't want the railway was a barrier. That was the whole idea. And it had to be as close to the United States as they could keep it.
Oh, I see.
So they went through Kicking Horse Pass, which is just outside of Lake Louise. And the other side of Kicking Horse Pass was called the Golden Stairs. And he tells, they tell in the book about the runaway trains that went down that mountain.
Is that book you have right there, The Last Spike?
The Last Spike,
that was,
yes,
an interesting sounding book.
They had to build runaway ramps, runaway lines off of that grade, just like they build runaway truck ramps today.
Oh, really?
And they had the man 24 hours a day. If a switchman saw a train coming out of control, he was to switch it off onto the runaway track.
Well, that's fascinating.
Wow.
And eventually, the Canadian Pacific abandoned what they called the Golden Stairs, which were west of Kicking Horse, and they literally hollowed out the inside of a mountain and took the track in a figure eight down through the inside of this mountain, down to the floor of the valleys where the rivers ran.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's an amazing thing. It's called Cathedral Mountain.
Mm.
And but the passenger trains don't run on it. You don't get a chance to see it. But it saved a lot of lives by doing what they did. Well, when we get together the next time, we can talk about the surveying of the mountains of British Columbia and trying to make your way through 50-foot snowfalls.
Oh,
in the
really?
Winter.
Wow, I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, yeah. What those surveyors went through.
Well, they had to build this in the winter also?
Well, they were surveying it in the winter. Mm-hmm. The thing was, if you got caught out in those mountains in the winter, there was no way out. You stayed.
Yeah.
The railroad was the only way in and out, right?
Exactly. Well, even then, the railway wasn't built then. These guys were on horseback with transits and surveying chains. And it's an amazing story. So we'll get to that on the next one then.
Okay, that'll be the next show, right?
Thank you.
Next week
we're going to continue this show with Max. So this has been fascinating. We're anxious to hear the end of this. It's going to be great. Don't miss next week's show, where we will continue with Max Somerville and the Canadian Pacific Railroad. Dick, tell them how they can listen to any of our archive shows on our website 24/7.
Sure can, Dana. And it's www.danasradiodiner.com. And you can hear any of our shows, including this one.
Right.
And don't miss the next one either.
Right. And don't forget, there's 2 N's in Dana. That helps when you try to get online and find my name. So make somebody's day today. Give someone a compliment. Thanks for listening.
Bye now.
Bye now.